Good morning, Jason. Thanks for doing this as always. We can now get down to it. I was saying earlier, and I guess anytime you bring up the deflated football thing, you're kind of contributing to it. I was just kind of, I'm still surprised that this morning on significant and big sports talk shows and TV programs out of the U.S., they're still talking about whether or not the Patriots lied, the deflating of football. The legs to this story is mind-boggling to me.
Yeah, I would like to chop those legs off, but unfortunately I am just one man, and at the Seahawks availability yesterday, I wanted to play whack-a-mole. You know that little game where you got the little hammer and the heads keep popping up? Like, every time somebody asks, like, I mean, Russell Wilson, I mean, come on. I mean, how many times are we going to just pepper him with questions? Like, he's got nothing to do with it. Like, he wants to play a football game. How do you think it would affect you? And what are you thinking? How big of a distraction is it for you? How big of a distraction is it for them? Have you ever played with a ball that wasn't totally deflated? Oh, well, even though you haven't, hypothetically, what do you think that would feel like? And how would that change the game? And could that make a big difference? And do you alter the balls at all before a game? No, I don't. Well, why don't you? Don't you think you should? Could that be a really good advantage? Why do you think Tom Brady does? I mean, it's just like, come on now, people. This was friggin' Sunday. I mean, it hasn't even really started yet.
I know.
So I just would say prepare for the worst.
Yeah. So what about the Seahawks? They come into this. We can talk about the Patriots. But the Seahawks, and we kind of talked about it, I think, on Thursday, that the one thing that all this football chatter has done is taken away any talk of the Seahawks. And and that win from a week ago, or it's from 2 weeks ago now, the come from behind was impressive. But they were still at a point where they needed that come from behind in miraculous fashion. Having sat on it now for a couple of weeks, whether it be Russell Wilson or the defense had a tough day as well, is that just kind of a blip on the radar? Because prior to that, they'd really kind of owned things.
Yeah, I mean, Green Bay played a heck of a football game. I mean, especially in the first half. And I mean, I think a lot of the Seahawks issues were just them being off their game, just not having a good day, making mistakes, a lot of drop passes. Russell Wilson making very out of character decisions with the football in the first 55 minutes. The five turnovers. I mean, I think that really was the story of the game. And frankly, despite five turnovers, that defense had only given up 19 points and had pretty much shut down the Packers in the red zone. It was field goal after field goal after field goal and not touchdowns. And that kept them afloat for those 55 minutes to the point where then Russell Wilson took the game over. And when that happened and when Seattle found its sea legs and started playing at its normal speed and tempo and with that sort of confidence and swagger and never-say-die attitude, Green Bay couldn't match it. And with each play, it seemed like Seattle gained more confidence and gained more belief that we're going to do this. And Green Bay was shrinking. And I don't know if you had a chance to watch the NFL film stuff where they had Russell Wilson was among the people they had wired for that game on the sidelines. And the cameras catching him in the huddle on the sidelines, talking to players between series in that final 5 minutes and in the overtime. It's pretty remarkable that he could be having that bad of a day to that point and not be down at all, and just to continue to sort of will people to stay in that game, it's kind of crazy.
Well, and it's dangerous too, right? Because everything about Russell Wilson to this point, we've heard the records of that he has against Super Bowl winning quarterbacks, watching him lead that offense and lead that team one afternoon, and already we're kind of, geez, well, maybe he isn't what we thought he was going to be. A little foolish to suspect that against a very good Packer team that maybe he isn't what he's demonstrated for going on 2 years.
Yeah, I wouldn't discount this kid at all. I think he's pretty unique. I think the way he's wired mentally and the maturity that he has and the dedication to his craft that he has and some of the inherent leadership qualities he has, they all matter. Like, it doesn't show up on fantasy football. You can't make money off that. You can't really wager on it. It's not monetized. It's not incentivized. You're not going to see a cute little statistic about it on the game broadcast. and it's not going to be a prop bet, but it's very much a key element in the DNA of that football team. And I can tell you, Pete Carroll doesn't take it for granted, and he's been around a long time. He knows not everybody has that. Do they ask him to do everything all the time that some other quarterbacks do? No, but trust me, he can do a lot of those things. He may do it a little differently. At 5'11", he may have to compensate here or there. But I don't know. To me, he's just a natural-born leader. He's a natural-born playmaker. He's a natural-born winner. And I say that, and that's probably not fair to him, because as much as I think some of this is, nature and being born with it, it's also nurture. And he does work at it, and he's very cognizant of things. And he fights hard to stay in the moment and remain positive at a time when everything around him is negative and others feed off that. And it becomes an inspiring thing to that football team. And I think this kid's only been in the league 3 years. He's got a chance to win back-to-back Lombardi trophies. I'm just supposed to believe that he's a passenger along for the ride. And he plays the most important position in everybody else there. He's just doing the work. I'm sorry, it doesn't work that way.
He is Jason Lacanfora, our NFL insider for Shank Sports Grill here on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Just looking at the numbers on the extensions for Alex Smith, who I don't think anyone would put in the same category as Russell Wilson, and Joe Flacco, who won a Super Bowl, but I don't think you would pick over Russell Wilson. What kind of numbers would we expect to see in a long-term deal? And does this set new territory, or is it going to be right in the neighborhood of what we've seen for Peyton Manning and Tom Brady on extensions they've had?
Yeah. I think Flacco is the one to look at. Alex Smith essentially is getting $45 million over three, which is a lot of money and, frankly, a hell of a lot more than he's worth. But Russell's going to be in that $20 million category. You're looking more, at the Drew Brees, Peyton Manning, Joe Flacco, Matt Ryan. Do I think he necessarily jumps Aaron Rodgers and gets to $23, $24 million? I don't know that he does. There's some guys who a big part of their ego and their sort of mentality is I need to be the best. I'm the best, and therefore I need to be paid the most. And that's Peyton Manning. I mean, his contract negotiations, you knew where the getting in point was. It was, we're starting, he's the highest paid player ever. And then we just got to figure out by how much. I don't know that that's how this goes with Russell Wilson. I really don't think it will be that way. He's going to make a lot of money. Don't get me wrong. He's going to be set up for generation after generation because he's going to get something like $60-plus million guaranteed. But I think the structure of it, the breakdown per year of it, I think will be a little bit more team flexible. The guy who I think is going to be the next 20, the guy to get the bar to close to $25 million a year will be Andrew Luck. I think that's the guy who ends up, setting sort of a new stratosphere for quarterbacks.
One final one on Wilson. It sounds like he and his wife are parting ways. Where is this at? Because it's starting to show up in the news cycle. Websites like TMZ reporting stuff in the last week regarding a former teammate and his, I suppose, now ex-wife, or in the process of becoming ex-wife.
He's been with for a while. I mean, he filed those papers. Pretty much a year ago. I mean, I found out about it before they visited the White House. And I believe they may have already been separated by this time, going into the Super Bowl a year ago, if not then, then shortly thereafter. The paperwork was filed, and that was becoming a legal document. And, that's a part of his story. I mean, he's another guy, too, where people think about, like, all this recent success and, like, wow, Russell Wilson, man. Look, he fell into this great situation. Now he just wins. This is a kid who only one school in the country would let him play quarterback and pursue his baseball career. Now, that was NC State. And then the coach leaves there, and Russell wants to continue to do this, so he transfers. And, he ends up at Wisconsin and with a veteran team, and in only 1 year there, he comes in and immediately is the leader and sort of has great success there. But he's only 5'11". He loses his father at a young age. He's got everybody saying you can't be a quarterback. He gets drafted in the third round instead of the first round, basically just because he's not 2 or 3 inches taller. He came into Seattle. They already paid Matt Flynn. I mean, people forget he had to go out and win that job, and no one thought he was going to do it that soon, and he did. And after 4 or 5 games, there was a lot of talk in Seattle, like, bench this kid, bench this kid, bench this kid. play Flint, and they end up, you know, having an outstanding year his first year there. And then, you know, he does what he does in the second and the third year. But he's like 25 years old. That's a lot. I mean, he's been through a lot. I mean, having to give up his minor league baseball career or whatever. I mean, a lot of things that meant a lot to him, and obviously the death of his father and a divorce, paramount in all of that. I mean, those are life-altering events for anyone. But I just feel like for him to be able to maintain this same even keel, despite all that, I think it's incredibly impressive.
One more on the Patriots. Despite all the distraction and the ballyhoo about the Deflategate, which we've talked about, how does this Patriots roster stack up to prior ones that have played in the Super Bowl? Because I remember us talking after week four, and there was a whole lot of question marks surrounding this roster.
Yeah.
It seems like a decade ago.
Yeah, and they've gotten better from within, and great teams do that, and great coaches are able to do that. You know, this isn't a sport where, you know, you're going to change the wholesale demeanor of your team at the trade deadline or whatever. You know, it's not like we see happen in baseball and hockey. It's much more calculated here, and they made little smart signings along the way, adding LeGarrette Blount, trading for Akeem Ayers and Jonathan Casillas right around the trade deadline, signing Alan Branch after Buffalo cut him because of a DUI, and he really helped solidify their defensive line. And remember, they were without linebackers for a while. They lost Mayo for the season. They were without Chandler Jones for a good part of the season. So they had to make some adjustments there. But primarily it's from within. Grant got healthier. Brandon LaFell figured out the offense a little more, became a factor. And the offensive line, which they reshuffled and went with younger, less accomplished players, gelled. And those, especially the interior of that offensive line, got more cohesive. And they improved as a unit. And they built week after week after week. And, you know, this team just turned into a monster. Each week they'd win a little bit differently, and they'd kind of put that in their back pocket and say, yeah, we know down the road we can do that. And then the next week they play Detroit. They don't even try to run the football. They throw it 50 sometimes, and you see LaFell and Gronk, some of these guys really come to life, and you're like, you know what? They have more options than we think. And then they, you know, have the kid Tim Wright. They run a lot of two tight end stuff for a couple of weeks, and they've got multiple tight ends at the same time, and it starts to look a little bit like the old Patriots. You're like, oh, they can do that. But they were getting run on. So then they make a few of these moves. They figure out their run fits a little more, and then all of a sudden defensively, the front seven starts looking pretty good. And then at the end of the year, they get Chandler Jones back, which should help their playoff pass rush. And they start to look a lot more like a complete group. And also they changed what they do defensively. I mean, this is a team that used to play a lot of zone coverage and three- and four-man zone coverage. And you get Browner and you get Revis in the offseason, and all of a sudden you become a press man team that might play a little bit of zone on one side of the field behind one of those guys. But primarily, they've gone from conceding 5 or 7 yards at the line of scrimmage to trying to beat up wide receivers at the line of scrimmage. And that was an adjustment for everybody because linebackers involved in those coverage, safeties are involved in those coverage. And I think players understood it more and accepted it more and got better at it. As they saw Revis and Browner make plays each week, they're like, oh, I get why we're doing this. So I think it's a combination of all those things. They've got a tremendous coach. I mean, an absolutely tremendous coach who I think, this, whatever you think about spying and cheating and balls and all that, you got to give this guy his due. They're back in this situation, it seems like, every year they're in the championship game or the Super Bowl. It's phenomenal.
Jay, we'll do it again on Thursday. I guess last one. Looks like Earl Thomas and Richard Sherman for the Seahawks are both going to be in.
They're fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't expect their health to be an issue in this game whatsoever.
Should be a goodie. If we can get to Sunday, we look forward to it. Have fun at media. Yeah, have fun at media day and all that. Don't kill anybody.
No, I promise.
Don't go killing anybody. Thanks, Jay.
I won't deflate any balls either.
That's right.
You got it, guys.
Thanks, man.